Welcome to the Failing Writers Podcast. Now without preservatives or artificial flavourings.
Well, hello. Welcome to the Failing Writers Podcast. This was meant to be quite an exciting mystery guest episode.
It was.
Full of surprise and intrigue.
Yep, John had done quite a lot of legwork. Kind of building it all up, getting us excited.
Yeah.
We mentioned, and you'll be all listening now. They'll be listening thinking, oh my God, who is it?
When did I see? It was planned for weeks.
Yeah.
Planned for weeks in advance.
It was all going pretty well. And I didn't know who it was.
I didn't know who it was.
Yeah. And then Dave didn't turn up.
Yeah.
Dave got the day wrong.
Which was the biggest surprise of all, really, wasn't it?
In a way.
It was quite scary, actually. Me and John did think that you'd maybe drowned or something, or had a car crash, or died in a kinky sex accident, or something like that.
Exactly.
What John said. That was John's
guess.
It
happened.
Yeah.
Well, I was in the car, and all I could just hear the phone ringing. I was swearing at the phone, saying I can't answer it because I'm driving. Who would be? Why would anyone be ringing me again and again? Leave a bloody message. And then I suddenly had a cold sweat that went, oh no, it's today. Oh bloody hell! And then was got stuck in traffic, so it was about 3 hours after that realisation before I could actually answer the phone to say, whoops, sorry, lad.
But then obviously I knew who the mystery guest was, so that kind of took a lot of the shine off it. And then there wasn't really much of a guessing game either, because we just did the Zoom call and then Dave guessed who it was.
Yeah.
I think he said hi, and Dave went, oh, hello.
I know who that is, yeah.
But then to be fair, John, I think it might have been that we were expecting like a mystery guest that maybe hadn't been on the podcast before.
Well, yeah. There
wasn't
is
someone that we knew really well.
There is that. But there was a link, you see. There was a mystery link. There was a murder mystery link.
Yeah.
That was trying to...
Well, as people will discover when Dave suddenly finds out when we play the stuff and he goes, it's Owen! It's Owen. That was me doing an impression of Dave, by the way, dear listener.
That was very good.
Not actual Dave. Yeah. That was very accurate, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So we're going to speak to Owen in a bit, but if you haven't listened to all our podcasts, I don't know what's wrong with you, but you should
probably go back. Hang on, who are you talking to? Who would have not listened to all of our previous podcasts, Tom?
Might be someone who's listened. This is their first delve into it. You need to go back and listen to
episode 8.
Is it 8? Yes.
Is it?
Episode 7, we spoke to Owen first time round, and episode 8, we decided to try and write our crime fiction first pages.
Oh, yeah.
So if you have listened to those, because John's surprise was to get Owen on to come and review our fiction. So if you know what we've written, then Owen's review will make sense, I guess.
Makes a lot more sense, actually.
So yeah, if you get to the bit in the podcast where Dave goes, it's Owen! Then you've gone too far. If you haven't listened to the other bits, you've gone too far. You won't know what we're on about. There you go.
Yeah. Perhaps we'll drop...
It's important to listen to them first.
Yeah, we should drop that in as a sort of... This is how you know where to come back to. It'll be me saying, it's Owen!
There's going to be so many disappointed listeners from off the back of last week's episode. Oh, mystery guest. That's exciting, isn't it? Can't wait for the big reveal. That's going to be... Isn't that going to be exciting?
It's all about just getting people to listen to the next one, Tommy.
Just luring them in.
It doesn't matter if it's rubbish.
Yeah.
Just wait till next week when we've got Jesus Christ and Elvis. Is he on as well?
And Lord Lucan.
Yeah. Definitely tune in for that.
It reminds me, every year as a kid, I would say something like, what have I got for my birthday, Mum? She'd say, it's a surprise. And I'd say, oh, what sort of surprise? A surprise if you get anything. And that was every single year.
Yeah. Other correct answers include, well, if I tell you, it won't be a surprise.
Yeah.
There's good that those things that you hear yourself saying as a parent that you've promised yourself never would.
So true. They just come out.
If Craig jumped off a cliff. Oh, my God. What am I saying?
Well, the worst one, I think, the most pointless phrase in the English language is, I won't tell you again. Because you bloody well will, very shortly.
But, you know, within all this, there are the marvels of child psychology. And one thing I could never understand is the countdown.
Oh, yeah.
Why does the countdown work?
Well, don't let me get to 10.
If you're trying to get him to do something like, no, I'm not doing it. Go and have a shower. I don't want a shower. I'm not doing it. Well, you need to have a shower. Because not. And you just go, 5. 4. Oh, they're off. There's no discussion about what's going to happen at the end of the countdown.
I have a feeling that's because you're a big bear-like man, whereas my kids just sort of look at me like, I'd quite like to know what happens when it gets
to zero.
That's
a challenge, isn't it? Yeah.
Would you dare wait till I got to zero just to find out, John? Or would you? I reckon you'd make it to two and then you'd be off like a shot.
No, I'd definitely.
You'd be like, I'm going to wait this out. Definitely. I'm going to see what happens. Two. I'm going.
Oh, God, don't.
I don't know, what do we do now? Now we've blown the mystery.
Well, that's the thing
probably
is...
Probably, literally, the only good bit of this episode is going to be Dave going, it's Owen!
But our surprise is always a good thing. Does everybody like surprises?
Well, I think in this case, no, we've proved they're not, Dave.
Katie hates surprises.
Does she?
I have said a couple of times to her...
Boo!
Yeah.
Is that what you said to
Would
her?
You ever like a surprise party?
And sorry. That... Did you ask her? Did you ask her if she wanted a surprise party?
At some point in the distant future, obviously.
I won't tell you when.
Not,
just imagine that you asked her when.
When's it going to be?
Asked her in 1996. For her 80th birthday, you've got a surprise party planned. You go, told you I would.
I quite like surprises. What about you? Are you fond of a surprise, Birdie?
I quite like a surprise. I do like a sort of a twist or a surprise ending. You know, I like trying to sort of. I think it's a good part of reading stuff is trying to guess what an ending's going to be. Yeah. See if you can sort of, you know.
Well, I was having this discussion with someone the other day actually about when you know when books or films or series get it just right where you're guessing at who's done it and they all make sense and your brain's going, oh my God, but it could be him as well. And then you start joining the little dot and they've put just enough in there. But they're not doing that awful thing where they overforce it and kind of go, oh, look, he's come out with blood on his hands. But it's obviously not him. You know, like when it's like Midsommar Murders or something.
Yeah,
it's
never
going to
be that
and it's
person.
Like someone is literally stood over the body with a knife. And it turns out it's not them. It was Mrs. Miggins from across the road because the guy wasn't that nice to a cat once.
Katie and I really got into, during first lockdown, really got into Elementary. Have you seen that with... what's his name? Johnny Lee Miller being Sherlock Holmes in New York with Joan Watson instead of John Watson.
Yeah.
And we realised after watching like three seasons of that the murderer always turns up at exactly the same like point. So you always know who the murderer is.
In each episode?
Yeah, because it's always, I think it's like 17 minutes in. That's when you meet the murderer for the first time.
Do you think that goes back to what we're talking about last week?
Blake Snyder's...
There's a beat sheet involved.
Yeah, definitely. Because actually...
turning up on page 12 or something.
Yeah, because crime fiction, I think, more than any other genre, is probably very formulaic, isn't it? It has to be.
Well, yeah, because that's the thing about... If it all depends on the surprise, if the surprise is all that you've got, it's quite a challenge, isn't it? It's like those, you know, like sort of Sixth Sense and movies like that, where it's all about the surprise. Because, I mean, I really loved The Sixth Sense when I watched it, but I haven't watched it since.
No, you don't need to see it again.
There's no reason to, because, the only thing about it was the twist, and I know that now.
Yeah.
I like the way you're kind of daintily pussyfooting around the twist just so as not to give out spoilers for a film that's, 20-something
years old. Well, it's always... some people get very upset about spoilers, though. Perhaps we should have a spoiler alert, perhaps, just in case.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, spoiler alert. Spoiler alert, spoiler alert. Spoiler alert, spoiler alert. Spoiler alert, spoiler alert. Don't listen to this if spoilers make you mad. Like you don't wanna know that Vader is Luke's dad. Like you don't wanna know if Bruce Willis is really dead. And Rosebud is the name of Kane's childhood sled. That body in the room is actually Jigsaw. The silly man shouldn't have cut his leg off at all. In Chinatown, Evelyn's sister is a daughter. Cause her daddy did something that he really shouldn't Spoiler alert, spoiler alert. Spoiler alert, spoiler alert. Spoiler alert, spoiler alert. Spoiler alert, spoiler alert. Norman dresses as his mother cause her body's in the loft. The bloke with the limb is really Kaiser Soze.
Fuck off!
The good place is the bad place, that's a cunning little ruse. Miguel's great granddad's not Ernesto de la Cruz. Robbie and Cecilia died during the war. In the old boy, that's his daughter, what's he do that for? But there's only one way I can finish this song. Those damn dirty apes were on Earth all along. Those damn dirty apes were on Earth all along. Spoiler alert, spoiler alert. Spoiler alert, spoiler alert. Spoiler,
There's got to be a length of time where it becomes acceptable. Yeah. It's different. I mean, if it's just come out the day before.
We're not giving away, Jesus dies in the end. There's not really, there's got to be a statute of limitations, isn't there, on whether it's still a spoiler.
Yeah. Bruce Willis was a ghost. There we go. We've done it. It's out there now.
No. Can't do that.
But what are your favourite twists? Have you got any sort of... Because that's the sort of, you know, the archetypal one, isn't it? Oh my God, he was dead all along. What are your favourite twists?
I do like ones like that, though, where you then go backwards through it. Or if you do watch it again, or you flick back in the book to the bit, go, well, does that make sense? And you go, and you flick back and go, ah, bloody hell, it does, yes. Yeah. He actually could be dead and be doing that. Do you know what I mean? So there's no, like, the worst ones are where there's the plot holes.
Yeah.
Where you go back and go, oh, hell of a minute, you're taking the mickey, because that couldn't have really happened. But no one really realised at the time, because we weren't joining the dots. The ones, that are watertight are fantastic, aren't they?
See, another film that I really liked at the time and haven't seen since is The Usual Suspects.
Ah, yeah, that's a good one.
That's another sort of classic twisty twist, isn't it?
I never got to see that properly because it got spoiled.
Someone spoiled it for you.
Spoiler again.
We just completely destroyed the film. I tried watching it because obviously it's meant to be really good, but it just didn't work with that knowledge. Like you say, you can't go back.
That's the thing, isn't it? Because there are lots of other films where there's a twist. Or, you know, everything's got to have an element of surprise in there somewhere, because that's how you create drama or suspense.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's about having something else other than that. Because some films I've watched over and over and over and over and over again, even though I know exactly what's going to happen. It doesn't matter because there's other elements to keep you entertained.
I'm not very good at watching films more than once because of that reason.
You know what's going
to
happen.
I like to have an unknown. I like to be taken on a journey where I'm not sure what's going to happen. Mm. So I actually watch films. I try not to guess stuff as well, I think. I try and be quite passive as a viewer and let it kind of wash over me. So I'm not trying to work stuff out.
Depends on the film, though, doesn't it? If there are some films that really drag you in, and there are other films that you...
Well, we watched... Have you seen The Undoing? With Hugh Grant and Nicole Kidman series. That is very well balanced in terms of guessing who's done it.
That is
well worth watching.
Are you going to spoil that as well?
No, I'm not, because that's a recent one. And it just does that thing brilliantly where it drags you in. You think, oh, he did it. He did it. Oh, she did it. Oh, my God, it's him. And at the end, it still all makes sense. But you just can't help guessing and having an opinion.
Do you think that's why, like, crime fiction and stuff like that is a little bit disposable? Because I think, like, comedies and things, I think you can go back and watch again and again.
Yeah.
But with crime fiction, because it's all about the reveal in a way.
I think that's right.
It's all about finding out, isn't it? It's like the reason why you want to turn the page is you want to find out who it was.
And once you've found out, it's gone. You're right, because, you know, in comedies, I can watch comedies more than once, even though I know what the joke's going to be. You can still find it funny. Yeah. And there are other
comedy's different, though, because that sometimes makes the joke funnier, doesn't it, as well?
You can see it coming.
It changes it, but it's still funny.
But there's dramas and things as well that I've seen lots and lots of times, even though I know how it ends. Because I guess that's not the only point.
It's not the point, yeah.
If you do something well.
I guess that's actually it, isn't it? If you've got a story hung around one single big thing, then that's everything's pointing towards that. So Bruce Willis in The Sixth Sense, perfect example.
Yeah.
That's it, isn't it? That's the nub of the story.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's, I don't know, Goodfellas, and it's a shock when Joe Pesci's character...
turns out to not be a good fella.
When he gets shot, then it's like, oh my God. But you can watch that again and still go, oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's not the entire hub of everything.
Yeah.
So maybe if you hang it on one thing, then once that's gone.
Yeah. Betty, have you read much like crime fiction?
Not a huge amount, but I think you make a good point, because there are books that I've read more than once as well, but I don't think I've ever read a sort of crime thriller more than once. Again, it is a sort of disposable.
And I can't really remember them either. That's the weird thing.
Yeah.
Whereas other books...
Yeah, yeah. It's all about that. It's all about the hit, isn't it? It's like the whole point of it is just to get to that reveal. Ooh, who is it? Or do they find out?
It's all the little Easter eggs, isn't it? It's all the little bits of food that you get to keep you turning. All those little satisfying moments where you find something out. Little nuggets.
Yeah.
Do you think that's why crime fiction writers tend to be quite prolific and write a lot of stuff? Because people need the new stuff.
Maybe
it is,
it's like an addiction. Do you know what I mean? They kind of need the next one.
Yeah,
even if they're a similar format and they hit the same beat points and stuff, it just needs to be fresh.
Yeah, and the big writers, they'll have droves of fans, won't they, like desperate for the next book to come out.
It's also the way that stuff's consumed these days as well, isn't it? Because like, not just with books, but with TV series, things get consumed in box sets. Even though, like, every episode of something, like you say, has the same beats, you see the killer at the same point. But you can end up watching, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 of them in a row, and they're all follow the same sort of premise.
We were watching one a series the other day on TV. So we watched what we thought it was just like a short 3-episode kind of thing. But it wasn't. It was just being updated weekly and it'd been on for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So we got to the end of the third one thinking it all kind of come to a head and conclude. And it just didn't. We were just watching through going, well, what? Is this going to end? This can't. How long's left? 12 minutes. You can't wrap this up in 12 minutes. And then it was like, oh, it's on every Sunday. Oh, what? You've got to wait to watch the next one. What is this? 1980?
I like those like TV events. I mean, it's not necessarily relevant at the moment because none of us go to an office. But those conversations that you used to have.
There's only a small choice of programmes and everyone has watched the same thing at the same time.
Everyone watched the same stuff.
No, you only really get that now. It's nice. Kind of sporting events, don't you? Or
big things like Line of Duty was one that everybody talked about.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But that's true, actually. And the Great British Bake Off as well. I think it's things where people watch it. Don't laugh.
Strictly Come Dancing as well.
No, where there's a time sensitive.
Who dies in Bake Off? I don't remember anyone dying in Bake Off. But
that was the twist, Dave. Was the twist.
Mary Berry was pretty old, but I don't remember.
Oh, she's been dead for years, mate. She's still presenting it. Oh, no, she isn't now, is she?
No, she's gone.
No.
Yeah, but things like that where there's an actual reveal, isn't it? There's like a time-sensitive thing that can get spoiled.
Mm.
More people watch them. But yeah, it's sad, isn't it? Generations now will grow up without having a...
Yeah, it's like, it is the feeling of like some stuff happening for you at the same time as other people, watching something at the same time. You only really get that with sporting events, like you say.
Yeah.
But it's weird, like even with... I watch a lot of football, but these days you can pause TV... So if something happens and I got to pause the game, go and do something. I hate watching like a football match on catch up.
Yes, I can't either.
Do you know what I mean? Even though I don't know the score and it's all
but
new
it's not,
to
you
me.
You know, it's not live in your head. So I'll just skip it's gone out for a throw. I'll just skip forward a minute. Oh, it's still out. Bollocks, it stays out. The ball's
like,
out.
Try and catch up. Yeah. I've had nights when I'm like fast forwarding, trying to catch up. And then it's like, all right, I'm with it. And there's only 2 minutes left. Bloody hell, ruin the whole chopping thing now. Yeah, there's something to be said for sort of experiencing.
Speaking of surprises, this might be a surprise. Do you know what genre of book is the best selling?
Self-help.
Sorry, fiction.
Oh.
Should have said
fictional
that.
Self-help.
I do not know the answer to that question.
Don't have a guess. Just make it more fun.
Murder mystery?
That is a...
Fantasy.
That is a good guess. It's actually romance.
Is it?
It's very, very profitable to be into romance.
But even with that, though, that's like it's still about surprise, isn't it? You know, it's the question of...
Dave,
will
it shouldn't be, mate. It shouldn't be. Not in this day and age. It's all about consent and stuff, isn't it? And being respectful. So it really shouldn't. He's going to have
no, most, okay, in yeah, most functional enough. Relationships, but, Dave, it's less surprising than you'd imagine.
Yes. Fair point.
But most,
however,
the
whole point of the story is like, oh, will they get together? Will they stay together? There's always got to be an element.
But there
of
isn't a surprise, is there? Because of course they will.
Well, yeah, I know, but that's the thing. You do know that. You know what's going to happen. Like even like a superhero movie. You're watching a Spider-Man film. You know Spider-Man's going to win even before the movie starts. But you know, it's about whether you can do something well enough to maintain that sort of level of suspense.
It's the level of threat.
Willing suspension of disbelief, isn't it?
Yeah. So interesting. So that's obviously most books are read by women. Audiobooks are different. I think they're mostly read by men between like 18 and 34. I was looking at the stats.
That's because men are lazy, isn't it?
I think it might be, yeah. Exactly. So what genre of audiobook sales are the biggest?
Biographies.
There go. Well, fiction.
Why is it always fiction?
some sort of fantasy, science fiction.
I think crime.
Yeah, it's thrillers. It is thrillers.
Yeah, there we go.
But yeah, the other thing I was reading, another stat that popped up that I thought was pretty amazing, is that apparently only half of traditionally published books break even.
Wow.
Like even break even.
Yeah.
Isn't that astonishing? So half of traditionally published books lose money.
Yeah. But then that is quite astonishing. But then I it's similar. I think it's even worse with movies. Like most films that are made don't make any money.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I remember, this is going back a few years though, MGM There was a period where they only made money on James Bond films, and every other movie they made lost money.
Bloody hell. You wonder why they bother.
Yeah.
See, the thing is, you can sort of understand that, because obviously there's their big budget, right? You've got to spend a hell of a lot of money in order to create a film. Whereas a book, you'd think, what are they doing?
We had this discussion on Twitter, didn't we, recently, about sort of originality and the fact that like a lot of books and a lot of TV shows and movies are sort of spin-offs of other things, or they're like, in order for something to be produced or published, there has to be a surefire audience already there. So it's a spin-off from a successful show, or it's already established author or a celebrity or what have you. Yeah. And I think that's where a lot of the sort of money goes, doesn't it? You know, paying in advance to Richard Osman to write a book, or whoever the celebrity is. You're not guaranteed you're going to make the money back, but you've got to spend that money in the first place, so people are going to do
it. It's similar, in fairness, it is similar with podcasting as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because the vast majority of podcasts out there are funded, well, firstly funded by established brands, but also have a known person in them, you know, celebrities to start
with. Two of the mistakes that we've made with this podcast, isn't it? We don't have an established brand or a celebrity involved.
All we've got is bloody good content. That is all we've got. All we've got.
All we've got are real surprises that pull the
You show me another podcast that's got Dave going, "It's Owen!" There won't be one. No one else has got that.
It's true.
We should see if people... it's probably about time that people got to hear Dave say, "It's Owen!"
What, live?
It'd be thrilling for them. It really would. And see whether Owen's analysis of our first pages of crime fiction... hopefully people have either remember or refresh themselves on episode 8.
Yep.
And see whether they agree with their own critiques.
Yes.
Bear in mind as well that Owen has a... well, he has a grievance, doesn't he, to sort of work through with one of us. So that could be interesting.
I don't remember that far back. I can't quite place.
There's cracking.
What it would be. Let's see
if you haven't, that's worth listening to episode 7. Just for the awkwardness. Oh, the beautiful, beautiful awkwardness.
Listeners, let's see if you have correctly guessed the identity of this week's
mystery. Who could it be? Oh, you could cut the tension with a knife. You really could. This is crazy. God, just let's get on with it, because I need to know who it is.
Let's find out.
Well, we've taken a rap from that other competition where we didn't want to listen to the judge's intuition. Now we're back to get the facts of the matter. Egos in tatters, but we gotta keep on trying. So fine, we'll take heat from Ryan to feed on his feedback like his wine. It's nourishment, gonna spend time getting fried. We must be gluttons for punishment.
It's Owen, isn't it? Hello, Owen.
It is Owen.
Hello, Birdie.
How's it going?
It's going very well, thank you. My sixth book in the series 2 days ago.
Yes, so I've seen. This is the one, because you talked about this just, it was just an idea, wasn't it, when we last spoke, I think
it was, yeah. Or was I writing it? I can't remember. I think, if I remember rightly, I'd written the first chapter and I was on the second one because I was having to explain who people were and I was struggling. I was like, oh, I've got to set them up again. It's like, you all know who they are, but I had to do it for the new readers. So I think that was...
Yeah.
But did you find the tips and tricks we'd given you on the podcast helped you?
Massively. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Massively. Yeah. It was...
You'll probably see that in the reviews and stuff and the sales, because it will show through, I would imagine.
Well, funny enough, I've had... The scary thing with this was, obviously, we get the ARCs out early doors, so they get out to preview readers. And... the first two reviews I got back were 2-star, basically saying, didn't get it, don't like the characters, boring. And it was a week before release, and I just spent the weekend proofreading, and I was like, oh, fuck, this is shit. This is really bad. And there was...
this is where it all ends. This is a downhill slope. I've lost it.
This is it. And obviously, because it had been a difficult book to write for obvious reasons, so I was just like, God, this is, maybe it is shit. Maybe I was right in the first place. It's not very good. And... And it's different. There's a slightly different sort of slightly different structure to it, because you don't have to wait till the end to find out who the killer is, or you don't start with the killer. It's kind of somewhere in the middle. But so that's a little bit different, and then it's kind of the chase is on. So I was like, well, maybe they don't like that, and you start questioning everything. Luckily, there was a 5-star underneath who was just so impressed with it and loved it. I was like, well, maybe. So thankfully, they're the only 2 stars I've had, and the rest have been 5 and 4s since then. But
that's good.
There was about 2 days where I wasn't getting anything, and I was just like, just in purgatory, literally walking around with my head down and my shoulders sagging. And Kim was like, "You all right?" And Kim was away for the weekend, so I was just on my own, literally staring at my belly, going, "This
stewing.
Is terrible." Oh, it was bloody awful. Hell. And one of them, I remember CJ Tudor talking about on this very podcast, because I listened to them all, like, you know,
as everyone should.
Absolutely. It's brilliant. It's why do people come back and read the books they hate? I've got one on there. Yeah. Hannah Law C. She comes back and she reads them and she hates them every time. I'm like, just stop reading them. It's fine. Yeah. I don't need that.
Do it to yourself.
Yeah. So yeah, it's doing all right. Although I did get a review overnight from America where I won't tell you the review because it would spoil the story. But she pulls one plot part, and it's a tiny plot part, and basically says that I am setting a dangerous precedent for women in America.
Wow.
That is all the review is about. It doesn't talk about anything. Whack. The review says, good story, terrible decision about the boyfriend. And it's all about the boyfriend.
Women in America.
Yeah.
Because there are no other issues affecting women in America right now that I can think in sort of Texas or anything. So, Owen, come on.
Basically, apparently, according to this review, sending women into dangerous or setting precedents that are dangerous for women's safety. And I'm like,
why would you do that, Owen? That's just me. Why would you do that?
I'm a bad man. And
yeah,
obviously,
I mean, that's terrible.
You know, so I was just like, oh, what? And thanks for giving away a big chunk of the story.
Spoiler.
Yeah. The very ending, the almost last scene. Thanks for that. They're absolutely crazy. So this particular woman, I was like, all right, you're an activist for that particular cause. I get that. This is fiction, and it's a very light version of what you're talking about. So I'm a bit concerned that that's...
No, it's funny. We've discussed kind of that thing before, though, as well, in different ways, whether it be swearing or what they do and how people will take umbrage against something a character does or says in a story. And it's like, well, that's what... it's a character. It's a separate... It's not the author's viewpoint. It's not saying this is the right thing to do. It's just some pretend characters do bad things sometimes or do the wrong thing.
And people have their weird little preoccupations as well, don't they? They'll hone in on one tiny little detail that really pissed them off.
Yeah.
And that will be the thing they remember.
Have you brought a coat with you, Dave?
Do you know what? It's quite warm here today, so I didn't feel the need. Right. But
Dave,
I always have some to hand.
I don't know what your view on Vera is, the TV show. I was deadly opposed to watching it for a very long time, and that's not a book title, but I don't know how to use that. Because I think Brenda Blethyn's accent is so bad, and obviously Tom, John, you've lived in the Northeast, it's so bad, but you get used to it, and you do kind of eventually spot there are like 3 Geordies in it, and everyone else is from Manchester. But there was a scene in that, and Vera turns around to her number 2, and she goes, "No coat and no shoes. On a night like this, what was going on?" And I was like, Dave. So you're always in my... This podcast is part of me now. I think of you on a Sunday night going,
"It's always a coat, isn't it? Always a coat.
It's always a coat."
So what are we here for, Owen? Why have we invited a mystery guest on? Well, I'm going to tell you. Now I've asked you the question, I'm going to tell you the answer. It's because...
You could have cut that into just a statement, really, John, couldn't
probably.
You?
Than... Well, the answer is basically, we thought...
Don't say the answer, because now that says you've got to ask a question.
Oh,
no. Just go into a statement.
Mess this right up.
Do you want me to ask the question, John, and you can answer it?
Why don't you do it? I'll answer it.
So, John, why on earth is Owen back on? Not that he's not invited and welcome. Do you mean that sounded
really
a bit... What the bloody hell we got him back on for?
Well... He's obviously a mystery writer, and I thought, what better to have Owen back on? I don't know if you can cast your minds back to when Owen was on before, but we did actually ask him if he would mind coming back and giving us some feedback on the murder mystery stories that we hadn't yet written, but now have. And Owen has listened to them, and he's now...
Oh, bugger.
going to sit in judgment.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
That's what he's here for. And I have asked him. Yeah. I've asked him to be as brutal as he wants to be. I want him to be very honest.
I think at this point, I don't know, there's something inside me that just feels glad that I've never left Owen a really bad review. Do you know what I mean? So there's no kind of like animosity or kind of retribution in there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, the reviewee becomes the reviewer. Wow, what a twist.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's lovely to be on this side of the fence for once.
Yeah.
Reviewing someone else's work. Yeah, Ben, you're fucked, mate.
So we're turning the tide. Owen now gets to review us. We're still, probably should mention, we're still smarting a little bit from a microfiction competition we entered and got pretty slammed.
Oh, we're so over that.
We moved on. Okay.
Absolutely.
You know, I listened to that podcast as well, and I thought the judges' comments were farcical, to be honest. It's because you were exactly right. I know you were kind of, I was laughing because you're like, we've been sensitive. And I was like, nah, you're not. They're just idiots, man. It's that Americanism of kind of everything has to be tidied up. And it's like, well, it doesn't. You leave it open. That's the whole premise.
Yeah. You know? Oh, don't. I'm getting the feelings inside again now. Stop it.
Sorry.
But you're right.
You're picking at the wounds here. Yeah.
Right. So who do you want to start with, Owen?
I think we'll start with Birdie, shall we?
Okay. Why not?
I thought it was three brilliant premises. Got to be honest. Really, really enjoyed all three of them. I think for you guys to say that you don't really write crime fiction or thrillers, definitely got a knack for it. And I think what I took from it was that you fell into the glorious space of being in control, of being playing God and being able to just manipulate people and have their lives in your hands. And that kind of really came through, which I thought was really lovely. So there's a word that sums up Dave's, which I think is competent.
A solid performance.
Yeah, okay. No, obviously I'm an avid listener, so I'm just going to take the piss out of you for a little bit. And you are determined to coin a catchphrase, which was taking back a joke is like shoveling shit up your arse, which I was cutting the grass when I listened to that particular bit and thought was very funny. And your obsession, deadly obsession, some would say, with hand jobs in nightclubs or in comedy club toilets and changing rooms, I think says a lot about you, Dave. And I thought, in all seriousness, you captured the sadness, the seediness of the small comedy club. It's a sometimes soulless quest to make people laugh at such horrible little venues. And I think you kind of talked about it. We talked about comedy, that in the bigger stages, there's an expectation that you want to laugh, so you are ready to laugh at whatever's funny. And John, and you said in those smaller stages, you know, there's that horrible fear for the first 2 or 3 minutes of, are they going to be funny or am I going to have to try and force a laugh? Is it going to be painful? And I think you captured that seediness and that kind of desperation quite well. Very low-rent comedian. And I love the way that he died slowly and in silence, like, you know, literally a comedian on stage. So I didn't know if you were trying to draw those parallels, but I thought that was really...
Do you know what? Now you've brought it up, I'll say yes. Yes, exactly what I was
doing. But what I will say, of the three, you've chosen the hardest premise to pull off, I think. And that's really because if you're looking at detectives and, you know, what would the detective in this, what rank would she be? Would she be an SIO? Obviously, for those that are initiated into it, senior investigating officer, someone who leads the investigations, or would she be someone who is like a detective constable or a DS who has a little bit more freedom to kind of express themselves? And I was thinking about, you know, how would you draw that out? And, you know, how has she got there from... I know you talked about the fact she always wanted to be a stand-up comedian, but her dad wanted to be a copper. So it's quite an interesting one to try and pull that off. You know, did she get bewitched by the whole case? Does it suddenly make her want to get back into comedy? All that kind of stuff. What's coming out of that? So there's a lot of questions coming out, which I thought was quite nice. And I thought the unique ecosystem of murders in a comedy club, a comedy environment, and actually of the comedians themselves is so unique. It could either be an enormous hit or completely fall on its arse because it's so different to what's out there. But I thought there was enough on that first chapter to make me want to come back and read the rest, or certainly keep reading. So, and I love the way, I really love the way that you sort of, you described the slashing of the throat. It was quite unique because you left a lot to my imagination, but it was really clear still what was going on. So I thought you did well.
That's grand, Owen. That's really good, that. Thank you.
What a massively disappointing review.
That said, one star. But no, that's really interesting, though, that, because I have, you know, you've talked a lot about the sort of research that you have to do and the context that you have. And obviously, just doing the first chapter of something, I didn't go sort of too far. But those are really interesting questions about, you know, what sort of rank would she be? How would she end up being the person investigating that case? Those are exactly the sort of things that that I should have been thinking about, or I should be thinking about if I carry on with it. Yeah, so thanks for that, Owen. That's really interesting.
I think if she's lower rank, she could be the comedy joker. You know, maybe that's part of her stick in the whole thing, is she's the wisecracker. And actually, you know, her interest in the comedy makes her the perfect foil to the murderer. And she, you know, whilst the CIA, yeah. SIO is maybe looking in different directions because of her innate drawn, what's the word I'm looking for, being drawn into that world, she might look in other areas that he doesn't, you know, that kind of classic.
Yeah, kind of getting under the skin rather than...
So I thought it was good. So I can move on to John's now if you'd like me to.
Yeah, go for it.
Sure.
Well, I think I love the... Again, you guys taking the mick out of John for getting an architectural kind of reference in there, as ever. There's a very kind of classic where everything you write, John, has a slight classicness to it, and it's very grand and expansive. And I thought I could see this being a really successful novel if you can pull off the first chapter, get that tension and that kind of colour and twists and turns into it. Then I think it could be really successful. I think. The reason why it appeals is people love to peek behind the curtain of privilege.
Yeah, that's what I think. Yeah.
And money, you know, and especially when they find out it's all going to shit. Mm. You know, things aren't as they appear. I thought the setting was quite Harry Potter-esque. The imagery of the body being devoured by the crows was horrifically detailed and colourful, which I thought was really, really good. The twist, you know, that she was still alive was literally stomach-turning, but in a way that allowed me to... get there myself without kind of overly graphically describing it. You know, there was enough in the setup for me to go, oh God, and she's still alive, to then start thinking, what is her body going through right now? Which is, you know, that emotional connection with the story, which I thought was really good. And I thought it was a lovely cliffhanger to finish on, you know. I did like Tom's idea of there being like some guy dressed as a massive crow walking around, just killing people dressed as a crow, that whole connection. That's kind of up to you. But again, I would definitely, I would keep writing it. I would definitely keep reading as well. You know, there was enough in there for me to go, oh, wow, what's coming next? And, you know, I think your descriptions of the guy climbing up and being on top of the tower and everything around him. And, you know, I was up there with you, which is, it was a great start.
Oh, thanks, man. What a nice thing to say. Wow.
I really did. Wow. And Tom's, again, beautifully crafted imagery of a woman finding herself alone in the woods at night. No idea how she got there. Graphic details of the body she discovers, again, without being over the top, which is really nice because there's enough there for me as an intelligent reader to go, oh, I can imagine what that looks like without you having to sort of, you know, push it at me, which some people try and do, and I think it's just a bit too much. The final twist... I've got to be honest, I thought it was epic. I thought it was really good. And sent a shiver up my spine when I hear, you know, the words, you know, you've done well, Miss Jones. But I agree with Baird, he probably changed the name. you know, because it does conjure up, you've done well, Miss Jones. And stood there with his arms back. His little waistcoat and stuff. But I kind of went further with this because I could almost see it as a Netflix series where women are found wandering the streets across America and they've got no idea how they got there. They've got scars on their arms.
There you go with the American women again, making them do
Look
stuff.
At me.
You've got a real issue, haven't you?
Can't help himself, can he?
Honestly, soon they'll just be like, "No, you're not coming in." But I love that, you know. And the scars don't make sense to anyone. The police are finding them, and they don't know how they got there. And then finding out through various databases that their DNA has matched murders that have happened all over the country. But again, they've got no, you know, how, where. They've got no recollection. And then kind of like this puppet master, you know, group a little bit like, you know, maybe it's a cult or it's a, you know, kind of slightly Hunger Games-y, you know, where people, rich people are getting off on it. It's just, I thought it was a really, really, really clever, clever story. And
I think I really love the idea actually of kind of having the usual police trying to find out what's happening and getting to the climax of it where they go, this is the person, we've got them.
Yeah.
And just then it all just falling down in tatters because it's not that person because they're also dead or whatever.
Yeah.
And then the secondary climax to the puppet master, like you say, is a really good description.
Yeah, I thought it was great. Really did. I thought all three would have me going to the, you know, chapter two and certainly my world of Kindle and Kindle Limited. It's all about, you know, swipe left, get those page reads going because that's where we earn our money. And for me, I would be flicking through to write what's happening next. So I think, fair to say, all three of you did a really good job. And I was sitting there listening to them going, you know, you should, I know you guys talk about struggling to write. Write this stuff. It's great. You've all got a, you know, a real knack for it. So go for it.
Just write it. Just write a brilliant book. Why don't you just write it? Wow. Thanks. Yeah. Let's do that. Yeah.
Honestly,
just write a series of six novels.
No, but seriously, though, do you think I should? Should I finish a novel first, or should I write it up for Netflix first? Which is what should I do? Is it too soon to sell it to them now, so I don't have to actually bother
doing
it?
You could sell the treatment. You could have a word with Adrian.
Yeah.
And get him to give you.
Yeah.
I would send that as a premise to Adrian and say, right, how do I turn this into a treatment to sell to Netflix? Yeah. I don't have to do anything.
Yeah,
and then the American writers will write it for you, and I'll just take a fee.
Completely ruin it.
Well, yeah. Like you say, you get your beachfront house. Happy days.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Just take the money.
Really good.
Okay, so Owen, thank you. That is amazing. But I feel like this is like a little sort of praise sandwich, and you're about to say, "But is that what's about to happen?"
No, for me, the only thing is get on with it, write it.
Oh, funny, were that easy.
Yeah,
It probably is that easy, isn't it?
But it is though, John. It is that easy, isn't it? This is the problem.
Yeah, it's just the one only foot in front of the other, isn't it? One word, another word, then write another word, then just write another word.
Only laziness holding us back, really.
Well,
isn't it?
Struck me about, because I listened to the other stuff that you write, and I thought erotic fiction was very funny from all three of you. Again, three very different styles. John's the classic one with the kind of, you know.
You imagine that's how John makes love, though, don't you? Like some kind of
dressed as a vicar
or something, yeah, or yeah.
Dressed in a full corset and all that kind of gear going on.
Yeah.
But you know, you obviously had fun writing that. But as Birdie said, it was like you had fun writing it, but you didn't necessarily enjoy writing that style of writing. And the horror stuff, again, you know, there didn't seem to be an enormous amount of fun. It was kind of like an achievement and a sense of pleasure. But when I listened to you reading this stuff back, you were totally, it was like, this is great. I really enjoyed it. I was really surprised. And it flowed. And what you all talked about was the fact that it was like you were just passing the story onto the page rather than have to think about it. And if you can write like that, that's the key to writing. You're just transitioning whatever's up here, just sticking it down on the page and not having to fight it, then that's a great place to be.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's true that I did enjoy that one more than the other ones that we've done. I won't give it a mark out of 10 because we've established I'm not very good at that. But I did enjoy that one a lot. Like you say, it felt like we were writing part of something bigger with that. We should do it, lads, shouldn't
Finish
we?
Finish our books. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe that's one for the Naira Wero.
Yeah, write a novel in a month sort of thing. Yeah.
Presumably you're allowed to kind of roughly outline it before
you
start.
You're meant to have it all planned out, all plotted out.
Yeah, yeah.
And then do the hard labour kind of thing.
So, Owen, I remember last time we were talking, you were saying that you're basically working on, I don't think it was the first draft, but you're working on the idea for the next book. Presumably, you're onto the next book now that one's out, like well into the next book. What stage are you at?
So, I had my first Zoom session with my publishers yesterday about the rough outline that I've put down. He was happy with what I'd come up with. He said it was a strong story. And then hopefully I'll be starting to write. My plan is to try and be starting to write by the end of September, early October. So with an idea for a January launch. It's called Deadly Night.
Very good. Are you allowed to tell us the basic premise, the setup?
Well, I believe it's called Deadly Night, isn't it? And it's set in a comedy nightclub, isn't it, Owen? Is that the idea? Is that the original idea that you've had for this one?
It is. I've got it's just a brilliant idea about this detective who has always wanted to be a comedian, but she has an impressive father.
And that just came to you.
Sometimes these things just pop into your head, don't they?
It's interesting because it's one of three ideas that I've got for the next 12 months.
Right. Okay. Right.
So
that's good.
It's always good to just let the ideas flow free. Kind of seems to work for me. You know, so.
Well, thank you, man.
Groovy.
That's been brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting such pleasant feedback.
I'm a big fan of the podcast, so maybe I'm biased, you know. Maybe they are shit, but I like them.
Maybe they are terrible, yeah, but we'll take it.
That's
yeah.
better. That's what
no,
we
honestly,
wanted to
guys,
do.
Keep writing. You are really, really good writers. There's no doubt about it. I know that from your previous careers. You guys were the you know, you were the best in the country. So.
Oh, well, that's nice, isn't it? This is what a lovely guest.
I didn't mean you, Dave. Sorry. I'm only kidding. No, honestly, you're all fabulous, so keep doing it.
Well, that's the kind of mystery guest that I would like to have more often.
Oh, thank you, guys. Honestly, I'm your biggest fan. I don't know if I've done the things right and I've subscribed and you know I'm there, but just know I'm always there.
Thanks,
and,
man.
You know, when you say someone tweet watching. Us, I always think, I'm going to tweet, and then I forget because I'm always doing something when I'm listening to you. So, yeah, great podcast, guys. Thank you very much for being there. It's lovely.
Thanks, man. You'll notice over the next few podcasts, our egos are going to be through the roof. So just listen out for that.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Owen. Thanks very much.
Cheers, guys. Man. Love you lots.
Take care, mate.
Bye.
That was some good wholesome feedback, wasn't it?
It was, wasn't it? Yeah. I feel like I actually want to go. I might start writing that now.
That's the worst bloody thing about it, isn't it?
It's reminded me I was really infused at the time.
Yeah.
And then it's sort of good, just time has drifted on and I've forgotten about it. But actually that's sort of revived a dead part of my soul, and I feel like I wanna get on and write
Let's do it. That's flipping.
Let's
do
it before it all disappears again.
Well, do you know what might help? Do you remember me telling you about writershour.com?
I do, yes. Because it was a stupid idea.
Well, I did it the other
day. Oh, did you?
I did.
What was it like?
You said I should, and I did. And I actually found it really useful.
What was it?
Really
what
nice.
What happened?
Well, it's very chilled. So you join at the beginning.
And you leave at the end? Is that how it works?
So it's Zoom, basically. So you can see all these little faces. There's hundreds of people.
Really?
And I actually did the 4 o'clock slot?
Yeah.
Which is the, I guess, the sort of American West Coast slot. So they're mostly American writers, but you know a few of everybody because you know obviously I was there.
Yeah, yeah.
But so your screen is just full of lots of little faces, and then you sort of type into the little box, the little chat box, what you're working on, and then they read a few out, you know, and then you're off.
Is there like a compare just, then? Is there like a
yeah? There was a couple of people who were very nice, very chilled, and they kind of set you off. And give you a bit of encouragement.
So they give some sort of shout outs to different people about, oh, such and such is writing a mystery thriller about a dog that can do whatever.
That's it. And then it's just silence and you see all these people writing. But there's something about the fact that you feel like this little community. And it's something quite nice about it. And also you feel like, I don't know, I mean, they're obviously not watching you.
Aren't they?
But you feel like you can't leave.
Yeah, yeah.
Or play with your phone because they'll notice it and go, judge you in some way. But I recorded the end of it. Do you want to hear the end of it? Because they had really lovely, like, soothing voices as well.
Welcome back. How was that session for you? Did you hit a word count? Did you hit that brick wall? Did you finish that thing you've been putting off for ages? Let us know in the chat exactly what you got done in the session.
Welcome back. Let's see. What did you do today? Oh, Jerome, you're getting some praise for your nice soft entrance back in.
Nice soft what?
What did she say?
Nice soft something
soft
or other.
Soft entrance beckoning.
Oh, yeah, she did say that, didn't she? Yeah, the nice soft music back in.
Oh, good job. Austin said they struggled this morning and he had to leap out, so no problem if you're in the flow. We see you back here tomorrow or later. And Megan made some progress today.
So they read out a few.
We ended up with over 1,000 words written.
A thousand words?
Show off.
Laura edited some memoir writing about...
Yeah, yeah. So people are obviously like showing off in the chat box.
Your first trip to Paris. Sounds lovely. And Carrie, you rewrote a scene and it went really well.
Do you know what it feels like? Do you remember watching Take Heart on BBC in like the gallery in the 1980s? And they'd go to the gallery and kids would send really rubbish pictures in. and they go, so this is from Stephanie, who's drawn the sunset there in crayon and milk bottle tops. Lovely that. Great capture of the light. And then they move on to the next one. It has that same feel of like lovely,
it does.
Positive.
Just everybody gets congratulated.
Just nice, chilled positivity.
Anyway, I'll play a tiny bit more because they just ask.
Yeah, I'm sitting next to Amy Sale, and I wanted to know how was today's session for you.
They ask
Hi,
a couple
everybody.
Of people.
So I got a little distracted with a related writing task on the same novel. So I'm just glad to be here. I'm actually on vacation in Oregon right now.
Cool. Oh, well, good luck. That sounds really great. Thanks for writing with us.
That sounds really great.
So that was obviously, there's like hundreds of people. What's really nice is you know that you're not going to get picked on because there's, you know, there's that many people all doing it at the same time.
Jerome, who do you want to hear from today?
Yeah, I'd like to call on John Rann. How was your session? You've been sitting across from me. Yeah, hey.
Hi. My session didn't
very high voice.
I intended it to. I was supposed to be working on my book, but I ended up doing some other stuff. I am a brilliant procrastinator. I'm very good at thinking of as many ways as possible to avoid what I'm actually supposed to be doing.
Definitely, I can relate. And what's your book about it?
Well, the book is it's a kind of time traveling comedy sci-fi about this washed-up ex-scientist from the future who steals a time machine in order to seek revenge on a man who ruined his career. But the time machine's real purpose was to save the human race by sending someone back to our time to warn humanity of the impending environmental catastrophe about to destroy the world.
Fantastic. So he's using it for his own purposes, but...
Exactly.
Yeah, I love it. That's great. That's fantastic. Where are you calling us from today, John?
I'm in Yorkshire, in the north of England.
Fantastic.
So it's 5 PM, which is my writing time, because I get a couple of hours where I don't have to ferry the kids anywhere or do chores. So I just get to sneak off for a couple of hours.
As you should. Yeah, definitely. Well, glad you joined us here, John.
Thanks for having me. It's been great.
Of course. Yeah. It is now 9 AM.
And off it goes.
Hey. I know him.
Do you know him? Yeah.
Yeah. I've heard him before.
I sent you a little WhatsApp yesterday saying that I'm a fucking idiot. And
oh, yeah.
Why would that be? Why am I a fucking idiot?
Is it your haircut?
There's so many reasons. Okay, so there were literally hundreds of writers.
And you
all
didn't
gathered.
Promote the failing writers.
There you go. Didn't even cross my mind.
Yeah.
I could have, at that point, I could have lied and said, I'm actually doing a task for a podcast.
Yeah.
That I
were you wearing your failing podcast t-shirt though, weren't you?
No.
What?
So,
no. But you had your name on Zoom as John Rand Failing Writers Podcast, didn't you?
No.
Right, okay. No. I think you maybe need to go back.
Yeah.
And
so everyone knows about your blooming time traveling book. But
not that they're going to pick you out of the hundreds of people in there again. That was just a one-off lucky break.
Exactly.
It was a great opportunity. Yeah, never mind. Yeah.
It is one of those sort of once-in-a-lifetime opportunities that you get to publicise something that's quite difficult to get
just
out there.
Just totally free advertising for hundreds of people.
I'm sure those...
Who are the exact target audience?
Massively
well.
In the target market.
It's the kind of once-in-a-lifetime opportunity that I'm sure will come around again soon.
Oh, yeah, I would imagine next week.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, certainly.
Yeah.
Despite having worked in marketing, didn't do a particularly good job there.
Well, do you know, I think you might have convinced us, I'm happily speaking on behalf of Dave, you convinced us that we should book in a slot together, and
we should do that, shall we?
Should we do it together then, or should
let's.
Shall we?
I think we should do that now the kids are back at school.
Yeah, we'll get something in the diary and do that. It's brilliant.
All right, perfect.
Next week on the podcast, we've got Rosie Wilby, an interview with her that we've done. She was very funny, wasn't she? That was a really fun interview.
She's going to talk about her book and podcast, The Breakup Monologues.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting.
Tune in. Bloody well, tune in. Subscribe, tune in, listen to the next one, and tell your friends.
Yes.
Because we desperately need marketing, because recently we've missed out on quite a few massive opportunities. One in particular that I can think of.
Yeah.
Yeah, get in touch with us. Nice to hear from you at
Failing. Leave it, John. You've done enough. You've done enough, mate. Leave, John.
I'm making up for lost time.
But until then, good people of the world, thanks for listening.
Au revoir.
Thanks a lot.
See you soon.
Take care.
Ooh, look at us doing a swift ending.
Woohoo! Shut that down, didn't we?
Ah, you see? I didn't come back and say bye at the end.
In your little voice.
Oh, I just have, so.
Hello.
Hello.
Where's everybody gone?